true. Okay, the green light is on the mic.
Don't you just love technology? Well, while they're working this out, let's go ahead and get started. Today's sermon, as you've seen the title, The Millennials Meet the Church. Now, we could have talked about Gen Xers, Generation Y, Millennials. Is it on now, or am I just coming through the main mic? Coming through the main mic, all right. Well, we don't know. Make sure it's down tight. We think so. It's not coming through. Still not coming through. Coming through, coming through. I'll go the handheld. I'm just going to set this one aside. Is it on now? Now we're on. Oh, okay. All right. Still on. No, it went away. It's that. Okay, I'm going to use the handheld. Testing. Oh, wow. Can hear myself think. Can hear my heartbeat. Wow. Okay, coming at this again, as we're looking at this subject, the millennials meet the church, it's really the next generation, whatever age we put them. In fact, you read the literature about Generation X and Y, that's a label that older adults have given them. That's never a label they've taken for themselves, by the way. We in the Christian church in the West, and when I'm talking about the West, I'm talking about North America, Australia, New Zealand, Western Europe, and Eastern Europe. Used to not be so much Eastern Europe, but it's there too. A little over 2 years ago, I did an evangelistic crusade in the city of Iași in Romania. Romanian Adventists, we have a large conference there. They do not have their own university, but 200-300 Adventist young people attend the university complex there in Iași, and they requested to be able to do an evangelistic crusade, them putting it on, I as the speaker. I went there with a little fear and trembling. It was interesting, though, how the perceptions and misperceptions I picked up while I was there. In their conference office, I was told by some of the officers, it was actually in the union office, because they have several conferences in Romania, "We don't have the problem here you guys have in the West," I was told. "We have never allowed contemporary music to enter our churches. And therefore, our kids don't have a problem with it." Then I met the youth director for the union. And oh my. He said, "Our problem is twofold. Half of our problem is we're losing our young people en masse, and the other half of the problem is we're blind to the problem." I thought, wow. Wow. But the fact that these young people would invite this hayseed from America to come over and participate with them in an evangelistic crusade, and they did all the work. Their music was marvelous every night. And they live streamed it to their campuses every night. We never had less than 1,000 sites viewing that series in Iași. And we had it in a very nice facility, which says there's work that can be done in uniting with young people as one way of doing it. Now, I don't want to call today's sermon a sermon, because I feel like if you're going to preach a sermon, you need to be preaching out of God's word. And today, you that have been here know that I tend to do theologically, biblically heavy topics. And I'm somewhat humbled to remember when a mentor of mine early on starting my ministry made me memorize, and every time we were together made me repeat it, an Ellen White quote that says this: "One text of Scripture is worth more than 10,000 of men's ideas or arguments." Well, today we're going to look at the challenge that we face. And it is a big challenge. And it's not just an Adventist challenge, it is a Christian challenge of the West. And it is huge. It is a train wreck coming at us. We dare not ignore it. So somewhere here, I've got an advance, and let's see if it works. Wow, look at this. Okay, these are two studies, and you'll see in this slide, of a comparison of children who are in the same denomination as their parents. And notice the changes in a 35-year period from 1970 to 2005. Now, there's two denominations that are doing better. The Mormons, way back then, recognized they had a big problem, and they completely reorganized how they did church. Completely reorganized. And we might disagree with them theologically, there's some lessons we can learn from them. The other group, if you call them a church, and that is the people who profess no church, they're really succeeding at making sure their kids attend no church. But notice mainline Protestant. That's where we fit in, that second category. Only 26% of children retain the faith of their parents, according to this study. Is that a problem? That's pretty big, isn't it? Today's young adult world is very, very different than our parents' world. As you look at the data there, percentage who would agree with the statement, my mother worked for pay for at least a year while I was growing up. Notice as you go from the World War II generation down to the millennial generation, how it changes. The percent who would agree men should be achievers outside the home and women should take care of the home and the family. World War II generation, that's what you did. But of the millennials, only 21% would agree with that statement. Our young gals want careers. They want an education. Now, if any of us think we're going to put this horse back in the barn, oh my, talk to me afterwards. It's too late for that. As we look at, now the interesting part of it is, you know, in Washington and Oregon, we run 70% unchurched. Where my wife and I live, I don't know that we have any neighbors that go to church. We used to have a couple and they moved. I don't think we have any neighbors for a while up and down the street who go to church. Of that group, though, still many have a profession of faith. The slide you're looking at, though, tells by age group, going up to the year 2012, and it evolves downhill, I'm afraid to say, from there. But look at the top line, the 18 to the 29-year-olds, 32% profess no religion, not even Christian religion, according to this study. Now, this slide is one that really concerns me. Now, I'm going to show you one that, in a little bit, that doesn't show the data quite as bad as this. But this is a graph by divisions of our general conference. And the gray on top, that's the over 60. I'm in that group, sorry to say. The blue, 41 to 60. You figured out where North America is? Yeah, you see it there? That's the third one in. What percent of our church is that group? It's pretty high, isn't it? It's pretty high. What percent are 40 and under? Now, if nothing changes, where are we going to be in a very few short years? We're in trouble. We're in trouble, big trouble, big time trouble. I don't come here as a calamity howler. This is data produced by our own general conference. This needs to be very sobering as we look at it. Now, the irony of it is, as bad as it might look for us, we as Adventists, we're actually the head of a failing class. I will get to more of that in a bit. But this was done by our general conference in the study of our own youth. Now, while they are maybe leaving us attendance-wise, notice what they tell us. 82% say religious faith is quite too very important for them. 82% do not participate in social dancing. 92% never use drugs. 79% rarely or never use alcohol. 80% say that their mother had a positive effect upon them and dads. Only 62% of our kids say dad had a positive effect on us. There are a lot of things here we could stop and spend all afternoon talking about, but we won't. 80% plan to remain Adventist through their lives. Did you get that? 80% want to stay Adventist. We're going to look at maybe some of the reasons why they don't. Sobering, sobering statistics. 88% want their children to be raised Adventist. 72% plan to send their children to an Adventist school. 74% plan to teach their children that Ellen White exercised the gift of prophecy. That's not 100%, but you know what? That's not bad. But we're now going to look at some data that was produced by Barna researcher David Kinneman. He wrote this book, You Lost Me. He also wrote a book called Unchristian. I highly recommend both of these books to you. When he wrote the book, You Lost Me, he and his team researched, I think it was something like about 8,000 various churches across the United States and Canada. Some of the Adventists were not part of the study group, but we'll see some of the data that he came up with. Our general conference, seeing the research that he did, contacted Barna Research and asked them to do this same study on Adventists and report back. And so about 4,500 Seventh-day Adventist churches participated in his study. We're going to be looking at some of the data that we came up with. According to David Kinneman, why do young people leave the church, any church, whether the Baptist church down the road, the Methodist church, or the Adventist church? Why do they leave? This is what they found. Well, the kids love their church. The main complaints were these. They find the church overprotective and stifling. They find church life shallow compared to real life. They find the church largely antagonistic to science. We're going to talk a little more about that as we go on. They find the church's regard of human sexuality too often simplistic and judgmental. Typical church says homosexuality forbidden by God. It's a choice. You've made yourself that way. You can unmake yourself that way. The next generation says no. Science today tells us that many gays are hormonally born hardwired into that lifestyle. I'm not here to debate that. But our young children look at science and they come to church and they find a different viewpoint. They wrestle with the exclusive nature of Christianity. That was a big one. Young people are saying, you know, we're not better than the Hindu, the Buddhists, the Muslims. They say, I'm a Christian and proud of it, but I'm tired of my church looking down at everybody else. And they find that very much of a turnoff when they hear their church always down on everybody. And they often find the church unfriendly to those who doubt or have questions. We've got the answer. Don't question it. Okay, you ready to look at how we compare? Look at the data for churches in general and look at the same study with where we fit. I didn't make this up. Your tithe dollars paid for this study. Let's not throw away what we've learned. The biggest one, half of our kids consider we're anti-science. Now, this is a big, hotly debated item. You go to our schools and a professor in a science class starts even talking about the pros and the cons of evolution, and somebody all of a sudden gets word of it, and tapes fly and books fly and the board is called, and the young people sit and they say, oh my, my, my. Young people live in this world and they cannot have we don't talk about it answers. That will not work. We don't talk about it. Doubtless. In other words, doubtless meaning the church has all the answers. Nothing should be questioned. Exclusive. Overprotective. Shallow and repressive. 37% of our young people said they found church atmosphere repressive. Now talk a little more about that. What did they mean by that? Now, these are some serious statistics. Let's look on. Okay, this was the statistical breakdown of mainline Protestant churches that Kinnaman found in that first study. As I said, we can congratulate ourselves in that we're the head of a failing class. Among mainline Protestants, when you look at the generation, that earlier generation, where are they at? Talking 10% in these various groups. 20% if you put all millennials together, Generation X, of who've stayed in the church. We can't go on losing our young people out the back door. And many of you I know have family members, and you know what I'm talking about. Okay, I said we're not the worst. Well, let's look at the same. This was the same graph on Adventists. We are doing better than everybody else. But we're the head of a failing class. A few years ago, USA Today had a front page main article. Some of you probably saw it. On church growth in America, only three denominations were growing at all. The Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, and Adventists. And we were at the head of the three growing group because we were growing by 1.3%. Mormons, Jehovah's Witnesses, they were breaking even to just a little better more. Everybody else was losing big time. But when you look at our data, if we don't turn things around, as my generation passes away, our numbers in North America could eventually drop to about half what we are now. And many other mainline denominations have experienced that. A year or two ago, I was an ecumenical gathering of pastors in the Portland area. Hope that doesn't freak anybody out. I was invited by the group to come there and speak. One of the gals that I met, I found her very interesting. She was from, I think it was possibly Lincoln City or Newport, one of those towns. Female pastor. She pastored a church that was a combined church of three separate denominational churches in that city. Every one of them went from an attendance of hundreds years ago down to a handful today. So what they did was they got together, they selected the best building. Everybody kept their own denominational membership. They sent their church offerings to their denomination, but each denomination paid a percent of her salary. So you've got three, what one time were thriving churches, now to an attendance of about 100. Three becoming one. Denominationalism was out the window. Who cares when there's nobody left? So like I said, we're the best of a failing class. Oop, I'm going the wrong direction here. This also Barna researched about Adventist young people, and this is telling. Now, the blue line are those who are very engaged. These are the kids you see pretty much every week in church. The red line, these are the ones that have probably checked out. And we're talking about young adults here. We're not talking about kindergarten kids. We're talking about young kids, college kids, etc. Notice that when it comes to not using tobacco, keeping the Sabbath, not using illegal drugs, especially that blue line, that's pretty high. That's encouraging. Red line, a little bit to be more concerned about. But now this next one. Kids really disagree with us on some of these topics. Movie theaters. Folks, our kids go to movies. Does that surprise anybody? How many of you adults my age lied to your parents to go to a movie? Can I see your hands? Oh, come on. Come on. Dancing. Now, what Barna found was they found a little different. And like I said, he studied a lot of Adventist young people. Now, they're not into the disco dancing. They're into more of the cultural folk dancing. But they draw a line in between. Whether we like the statistic or not, this is reality. This is where the young kids are. They are seeing the world different. They're wanting to be Adventists. They believe in our doctrines. But the division between life, they're not as willing to stand away from everything. Cosmetic jewelry, rock music. Music is a big, 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 big issue. Now, we can say what we might wish, but this is the data. This is what we're dealing with. You go to a church, a Seventh-day Adventist church that is primarily a millennial church, and most of the gals, young gals, are going to have jewelry on. It's not a moral issue to them. They moved on from it. They know that grandma has a fit about it, but they've moved on from it. They don't see it as an issue. Now, we can spend an afternoon discussing this, but this is the reality of where our kids are at. This is some of the areas they start checking out, and if we start coming on too strong, this is where they start finding us maybe a little repressive. They want to talk about these things, but they say, you know what? It is what it is. If you don't like it, leave. Now, some places have tried, some churches have tried creating different churches, different worship services for different lifestyles, for different preferences. I want to tell you that much research, books upon books, show that having different worship services of different music styles does not work. Doesn't work. You end up creating two different churches that meet in the right in your own building, who walk past each other. They don't talk to each other. They don't know each other. They live in two different worlds. Research shows that there's two opposite but equally dangerous church responses. When the church minimizes the concerns of the next generation, but also being so youth-focused that the church fails to create a church for every generation. Now, one of the things that we have learned from, and you can read it in the books that I recommended, there's others. Another one I highly recommend is called Deep Church. Research that's been done on millennials and so forth, they don't dislike hymns, by the way. They love hymns. But they have a much broader repertoire of music than the parents. Folks, every generation writes its own music as an expression of their experience. And when you tamp it down, now, yes, there's limits. And if we had time, I'd talk about those limits. But every generation does and will write its own music as an expression of their experience. We've got to be careful here. But at the same time, what young people tell us in the studies is they want a sense of community in the church. They want grandpa, mom and dad, aunts and uncles, their friends there. They want a whole community. If there's anything they tell us in these studies is they want us to quit dividing the churches. Now, where from here? Mentoring is probably one of the areas we fail the most. Kids grew up in our church, we send them to our schools, and the next thing we know, they're gone. Why'd they leave? Research also shows that one of the main places that we fail is that our kids do not have spiritual mentors. They do not have mentors within the church. We assume just because they're here or attending Sabbath school is not a mentorship program. You know, it's interesting how some things freak some of us out. Ever hear about spiritual disciplines? That's been a dirty buzzword. That has been a term that's been used since the days of Ellen White. You read the book, Counsels to Parents, that's a book on spiritual disciplines. That term has been around for a long time. Our seminary at Andrews has taught a class on spiritual disciplines for generations. But then, of recent, some very progressive groups started doing what they called spiritual disciplines for all walks of life, faiths, and everything, and started writing books on spiritual disciplines, how you can bring a community together. And in other words, everybody, no matter whether you're Muslim, Hindu, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the same spiritual disciplines apply to all. And suddenly the word spiritual disciplines became a dirty word, and somebody discovered they're teaching a class on it at Andrews. You know what? The same class is still being taught, but they've changed the name. And there's nothing wrong with the class content if you'd look at it. But my, the books and the tapes, they run all over. And our young people see it, and they walk out the door. We got to be smarter than some of this type of stuff. True education is the training of men and women to being thinkers for themselves, not mere reflectors of other men's thoughts. If there's a problem in the church, let's make sure we truly understand what the problem is, not exacerbate it by a reaction that's unwarranted to something. As I said, one of our biggest problems, and research shows this, is mentoring. I want to ask you the question, who mentored you in the church? When we don't find positive mentors by default, we find negative ones. And research, and there's good research, reliable research, that shows the way we're failing is that we put our kids in programs, but we don't get close to them. And the natural church development studies that we've been doing in the Oregon Conference for quite some time, probably 15, 20 years, there's 8 categories that churches are studied. One is there's 2 areas that we fall down on. Loving relationships within the congregation and inspiring worship services. Yeah, these are the areas, these are what we beat ourselves up on. In studies, the members reporting themselves about what they like and don't like about their church, these are attending people, these are the areas. Because sometimes we find that people are convinced to be Adventists, so they come to the Adventist church, but they don't make friends in the Adventist church. They come to the Adventist church because for their beliefs, there's no place else to go, but they don't have friends. As I worked in the Oregon Conference, I always wanted to be there for Sabbath school. Because I wanted to watch how people, when they came in the door, reacted to each other. And then what I really looked for was what happens when church is done. If in 5 or 10 minutes the parking lot was empty, you have a sick church. But if an hour after church the parking lot is still half full and wasn't even potluck because people were enjoying each other's fellowship so much, nobody left. Now you've got not only a healthy church, but I could promise you a growing church. Because people were into each other. And when it comes to inspiring worship services, 2 things we've learned. Number one is, you know, churches shouldn't be pastor dependent, but all studies show that if the word is not preached, the people aren't going to bother to come. That's number one. Number two is the friendliness of the church. Yeah. Somebody said evangelism starts in the parking lot. Yeah, it does. It starts there. Oh, I got to keep moving here. I threw this in. Is it okay to have a little humor in church? This is a cartoon, but the caption says, this gal is coming back to talk to her teacher and says, "Everyone was there to shake my hand when I won the spelling bee, but you were there to hold my hand when I was practicing for the spelling bee." Doesn't that speak volumes? When we mentor kids and get them involved in the church, we've got to accept when they come up, they're not going to do it as professional as some of the rest of us. Now, pastoring a church like Sunnyside, that is a very high professional church, it took a while to get everybody to realize, you know what? Let a child pray like a child. Let a child play the piano as children play. Let a child sing as children sing. It's okay! And they responded. This, you should recognize, this is not normally an instrument of torture. Okay? But for me, it was. Here's what happened. Fifth grade, my mother decided I was going to take piano lessons. And I was taking piano lessons and doing my practice right next to our public grade school. There's a gal, her husband was the principal. She taught piano. And so once a week, I slipped out of class or study hall, whatever it was, and walked over and took my piano lesson. And I still remember that day. I can remember it like it was yesterday. She got upset with me. Somehow I was not getting this piece. And she took both of my hands in her hands, and she's banging out the letters, calling F sharp, C sharp, da 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 da, 1, 2, and to it. And she's banging them out and just taking my hands and jamming them in. The tears started to flow down my face. I was absolutely terrorized. And it went on for some time. And she's belittling how, you know, she got onto these farm kids. Ooh, that hurt. When I walked out of her house, I knew one thing, and that was I'm never going back in that house. And I didn't. I announced to my mother that I am done with piano lessons. But I never told her why. Because I didn't want her going and talking to the teacher. And I knew that in the end, I would look like the stupid kid. So the easiest thing was to walk away and never come back. And I didn't. And by the way, gals, I love hearing you on the keyboard. I just wish I could join you. But I got stopped back here. What if it had looked more like this? This is mentoring. This is what it's supposed to look like. This is when we hand in hand in love, in care, and allowing us to be who we are. Is mentoring teaching? Yes, it's teaching if we see each student as unique. They're not all the same. If the teacher first understands how the student sees the world they live in and what it is they wish to learn. Ooh, that takes work. That takes some getting close to kids and spending time with them and listening maybe more than we talk. If the teacher steps down into the world of the students, if spiritual mentoring uses the wisdom of the Bible as the supreme guide, and lastly, if the teacher and student learn together and are changed, both of them, by the journey. The teacher, the mentor, will be changed by the journey if you walk that closely to the kids. Remember the picture? This is mentoring. Just handing the kid a music book won't work. Say, read this. No, it's not going to work. Is mentoring coaching? Yes. If the coach first determines to discover how the trainee learns, because every student learns differently. If the coach assesses what they already know. Let's not talk over their heads or under their heads. Has to have an assessment of what talents and aptitudes the trainee actually has. And what would make the student feel fulfilled in accomplishing? What do they want to do? What do they want to learn? A hint. Students would rather have a guide on the side rather that should be than a sage on the stage. Let me say that again. They would rather have a guide on the side rather than a sage on the stage. Yeah, they want you beside them. Is mentoring being a best friend? Yes, if both parties trust and respect each other. If they have appropriate boundaries. If they have mutually accepted goals in the learning process, the child needs to know where you're going and wants to get there. If the mentee encourages without emotionally enslaving the mentee. We spend a lot of time talking about some of this stuff. And fifth, if the mentor can release the student to go on to the next mentor. That's important. Is mentoring eldering? Now, eldering. This used to be a very common term in Protestantism, and it sounded old and went away. But ironically, in contemporary churches today, in the contemporary research, this is a resurrected term, and they think they invented something new. What is eldering? Like I said, this probably strikes many of us as, whoa, that's too old fuddy that even... It's actually coming quite back, you know, like the name Ella and Isabella and some of these, you know, that we thought were old, and we had aunts that passed away with those names, and now our kids name their kids by these names. You know, everything comes around in time. Is mentoring eldering? Yes, when the elder is the source of the church's history, teachings, and stories, and acquired wisdom. The young people need the older people. In this book, Deep Church, that I was talking about, the researcher there begs contemporary churches, which he leads, that we have to know our church history, or we will also repeat every mistake they made. We need to know why we are who we are. Number two, when the elder has the authority of trusted wisdom, not a wand of rulership. Three, when an elder inspires individual thinking and the weighing of consequences being faced. Notice inspiring thinking. When the elder asks questions, when the elder trains, empowers, and finally lets go. Remember, eldering is not defining by one having control authority and the other being a non-person subject. We've got to redefine how we do that. So what should you do? I'd like to suggest try these steps as we get close to young people. You know, sometimes we make junior elders, junior deacons, and we suppose they just know how to do it. And we wonder why they quit. We need to apply what we just talked about. Staying close to them, befriending them with proper boundaries, but letting them guide the journey. It's a simple formula. Step one, you do, I do, you watch. I do, you help. You do, I help. You do, I watch. And the final stage is empowerment. You encourage and help them do it. I want to give you an illustration. Williston, North Dakota, I became very good friends with a business proprietor there in town. Had the largest furniture store there in town. Joe Birch was his name. Every month or two, he asked me, every month or so, stop by. I need to spend an hour with you. He's not an Adventist, he's Catholic. And when I came in, he would tell the staff, the preacher and I are going to go spend a little time. Don't interrupt us. And we'd go back in the corner and check out the new furniture, and we'd spend an hour or two. He had questions. But I remember this question this one day. He said, Pastor Scott, I have a 22-year-old son that I've always dreamed that someday would take over the family business. He doesn't want anything to do with it. I said, what's he want to do? He wants to be a police officer. And police officer was stated as though it was kind of a second rate, why would you want to do that, you know, type of thing. He said, what should I do? I thought about it a while, prayed a little bit. God gave me an idea. I said, Joe, if he wants to be a police officer, you help him be the absolute best police officer in the world. If he wants to go to some special police academy, you've got the money, send him there, and you be behind him 100% cheering him on. I said, he needs to succeed in his own boots, in his own calling. Because I said, you know, if he came back here, he couldn't fail. He would always feel like everybody would say, well, you had it easy. You had it handed to you. And he would have, Joe. So I'm not trying to be hard on you. But if you want to make a man out of him, you've got to help him succeed in his own dreams. You know what? Joe went and did exactly that. For a number of years at Christmas time, after we moved from there to Davenport, Iowa, we'd get a Christmas card from Joe. And I still remember the year, the return address, Joe Birch and Son. And it was circled with a little note on the front of the envelope. Thank you, Scott. It happened. Wow. I don't need to preach the illustration. You've got it. I do, you watch. I do, you help. You do, I help. You do, I watch. And then I empower you. Keep in mind, mentoring is not about cloning. The mentee can be expected to, that is the student. Now here we're going to get into some discussion stuff. You can take this home and chew on it on your veggie loaf today. They can be expected to challenge the rationale of old beliefs. And that has to be okay. That has to be okay. They can be expected to reframe our beliefs into their own world, and they'll look at it a little differently. They will rearrange old list of what's important about church and life and Christianity and Adventism. They'll rearrange the list. They will try new things thought impossible. They will usher in new artistic expressions. I want to tell you an experience we had at Sunnyside. As the church board of elders voted, it's time to turn this ship around. We are a dying church. And we talked about what we wanted to happen and not happen. And one of the things we voted was once a month we would do young adult church. When I'm talking about young adults, it was really millennials. And we advertised it for a couple of months just to make sure the church was ready for it. We put them in charge of all the music. They even let me preach occasionally. But one of the things we agreed to is occasionally they may do something we don't like. And you know what? How we react is more important than what they did. Do you hear that? How we react is more important than what they did. And we had a couple of times, I'm thinking I'm going to hear and get the emails, and I would. Hate to open my computer because, boy, there'd be a few emails. Pastor. The irony of it was the first Sabbath we did it, I had probably a dozen, maybe 15 saints that They're not coming that Sabbath. So I expected an attendance dip. Our attendance had been going up, up, up. We're pretty pleased with that. But we expected an attendance dip. Our attendance was up 50 for the Sabbath. Because young adults came in from everywhere. And we found, you know what? I had to talk with them and coach them and tell them, it's young adult Sabbath, your responsibility is not to just feed yourself. Your responsibility is to conduct a worship service to allow the whole community, including your generation, to come together and meet God and feel good. And some music you'll choose not to do. Well, one of the things they chose to do less of was the pipe organ. Now, Sunnyside has one of the premier pipe organs in the Northwest. They said, you know what? It's not going to be a priority to us. I thought, wow, where have I heard this? We don't want it all to go away. We want to do some different instruments. What do you have in mind? Well, I still remember what they came up with. They used the piano. They used a cello and a violin, a guitar, an oboe, a flute, a banjo, and a binge drum. Binge drum, these little tap, 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 tap drums, not a snare drum. You know what these kids, some of these kids were working on PhD degrees in music around the city. They took some of our old hymns. I teared up when I heard the music. And they put fresh life to them. And wow, it was awesome. The 12 or 15, eventually they all came back. And the church grew. I give God the glory. I give God the glory. We went from 425, 450 to right at 600. And they're still there. And part of my goal as a mentor was, if when I left Sunnyside, it all fell flat, I would have failed. My goal my last couple of years was to make sure that I had trained in everybody that I could so that when I left, they didn't miss me. What I didn't plan was that I was going to be leaving sooner than I planned because of stroke and heart surgery. But you know what? God blessed. And I'm not trying to toot my horn. They are succeeding without me. They don't need me anymore. That's success. At times, they will assert independent thought. Number 6. Well, we've come full circle. I don't claim to have all the answers. But we cannot go on doing business as usual. This is going to take time on our knees. It's going to mean, this book that you saw, You Lost Me, we ordered 200 of them for the Sunnyside Church and gave them to families and with a requirement you read it, and people did. And it changed people's thinking. I commend it as a possible idea. Millennials meet the church. I want to return to somewhat as we begin, God giving the promise through the prophet about how in the last days our kids are going to see visions and prophesy. And God ended the book of Malachi in verse 6 of chapter 4, and he will restore the hearts of the fathers to the children and the hearts of the children to the fathers. This is the end game plan that God has. He will not fail. His words will not return to him empty. The church will succeed. The gates of hell will not prevail against the church. But we need to be part of the success. In closing, hymn number 547, Be Thou My Vision, and we'll sing the first and the last stanza.